We have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the State. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
And when I say Eat the State, it's one of those very special times of the year where
the planets have aligned, and some trees have died for your benefit.
An actual copy of Eat the State. So. Uh-huh.
Yes. Yeah. We're in a cycle now where we went online only a couple of years ago, except that we do print issues for the election, and so we have our endorsement issue out. It's at many places, although unfortunately not all of them, where you can find free periodicals. So look for it, and we also have a lot of the content and the endorsements at www.eatthestate.org. And we will start going through those endorsements this week and finish them up next week. The usual caveats apply, which is that these are, you know, our opinions, and go do your own research. That's number one. And the second caveat, of course, is that voting is fine and wonderful, but real systemic change and policy change comes from organizing on the ground, and candidates reflect that rather than, real change doesn't start at the ballot box. The elected officials are really the last part of the process. So. Yeah.
All right. So starting with endorsements this week, and you guys are going to cover the federal offices and initiatives. Is that right?
Exactly. And then we'll do the state offices and the judicial and local sheriff's race next week.
All right. Well, then let's begin.
Well, we'll start with the big one, the presidency. And this is a little bit of a nuanced endorsement, because if we have listeners to this show from outside Washington State, in fact from all over the world, thanks to KEXP.org, a lot of folks who listen from out of state, and if you are in a state where there is a chance that Mitt Romney could win the electoral votes, then by all means, go ahead and vote for Barack Obama, because as flawed and as dubious as Obama's record is on a number of things that we've talked about on this show over the last 4 years, he represents at least a tenuous grasp on reality,
which is more than
what can be said for the opposition party at this point and its presidential standard bearer.
Has at least one foot in the real world, which you really can't say.
Yeah,
Mitt Romney.
And you know. I'm sympathetic toward the argument that, you know, we basically have two wings of one corporate party and yada, yada, yada. However, even from where we were during the Bush years, the Republican Party has radically changed. It is a party right now that, just makes stuff up and uses fiction to rationalize what it wants to believe. And, you know, given that if Romney wins, we're also likely to have Republican control of both the Senate and the House and the Supreme Court, so there would be no real checks on their power, particularly since Democrats aren't nearly as likely to use procedural obstruction tactics as the Republicans are. There's a lot at stake in this election with Obama being reelected. That being said, in Washington State, there is no conceivable way that Washington's electoral votes are going to determine this election. Obama, last I saw, was up by something like 25% here, but even if he lost, there were 35 or 40 states that would go to Romney before Washington State did. So, here in Washington State, we are really free to vote our conscience, and if you think that the candidates on the ballot, Obama best represents your views as a corporate centrist with progressive social beliefs, then by all means vote for him. But there are more progressive candidates on the ballot, and two in particular, Dr. Jill Stein of the Green Party and Rocky Anderson, the former Salt Lake City mayor of the Justice Party. I have a slight lean toward Rocky Anderson. They're both good candidates. Anderson has more of a track record. He's been an elected official. He was very visible during the Bush years as somebody calling as an elected official for George Bush's impeachment. The Justice Party has not had an opportunity to try and organize itself and become a sustainable electoral force. The Green Party's had that opportunity for many years with higher profile candidates than Jill Stein, and has not taken advantage of that. But either candidate is very good on the issues, and either one of them is a fine vote.
I agree.
All right. Other items in the...
Oh, yeah, there are other ones, aren't there? Yeah, U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell is going to coast to re-election, and since she and Republican Michael Baumgartner are the only two on the ballot, and Baumgartner, despite his pretensions, is very much a Tea Party creation, Cantwell is the vote there. The various congressional races. Again, Suzanne DelBene in District 1 is running against a Tea Party candidate, John Coaster. That one is likely to be very, very close. DelBene, again, a corporate centrist. She's no treat. Number one, she would be better than Coaster. And number two, any time you have a Democrat versus a Republican, and the House may well be in play this year, who is going to vote for the leadership and who's going to be on the different committees and control the different committees makes a difference, and party affiliation makes a difference. In District 7, Jim McDermott is going to coast to re-election. I strongly suggest you write somebody in there. District 8, again, Karen Porterfield is the Democrat running against Dave Reichert. And District 9, Adam Smith is also likely to coast to re-election. And this is kind of a shame because there was a lot of talk in the redistricting about how we have Washington State's first majority-minority district, and yet here you have a middle-aged white guy and a fairly centrist middle-aged white guy representing the district anyway. So we were suggesting writing in somebody who's not white and who has a fine record on education issues and is also far more popular than Adam Smith. So we're suggesting writing in Big Bird for the 9th district. And 10th, once again, as is true of many of these districts, the Democrats are running centrists. Denny Heck against I can't even remember who the Republican is, but that one again is same sort of situation as the first district. It's a new district. It is a swing district to maybe slightly leans Democratic, and so Heck is the hold your nose and vote choice in District 10. General Olympia.
Okay.
And then we have the propositions, and there are several important statewide propositions on the ballot this year. Let's start with Initiative 502, which is probably the most problematic of the initiatives. That is the marijuana decriminalization initiative. And the biggest concern about this one, aside from the fact that as with any legalization or decriminalization initiative, you're going to get pushback from the federal government. The thing's going to wind up in courts, and it's likely to be a mess. The flip side of that is that Washington State is probably the best chance of the three states that have decriminalization initiatives on the ballot this year to pass it, and as such, really force the national conversation around the insanity of the war on drugs, and particularly the insanity of the criminalization of marijuana and the hundreds of thousands of people who are jailed each year in this country for nonviolent marijuana possession.
We are sensitive to the argument that this initiative is not perfect, and in particular, portion of it that would involve traffic stops and drug testing and limits, legal intoxication limits
are not scientifically valid
and that are
likely to leave anybody who is a regular cannabis user, including medical marijuana patients, as chronically being over the limit, whether they are intoxicated or not. Mm-hmm. That's really problematic. However, those people being victimized and susceptible to the court system is an improvement over everyone who is a cannabis user being susceptible.
Which is the current state.
Which is the current state, and which would be the state if this doesn't pass. And so the recommendation is to go ahead and pass it with a strong push, starting to organize pretty much on November 7th, for getting this changed in 2 years when the initiative law can be changed to bring the DUI provisions more in line with actual scientific reality. Initiative 1185 is Tim Iman's latest every 2 years initiative, because 2 years is how long it takes before the legislature can change an initiative. And Iman refiles this every 2 years to require a two-thirds legislative vote for any revenue increase, whether that's a tax or a fee increase. And this has been found unconstitutional this year by state courts. That's still being appealed and adjudicated, but 1185 is likely to go on that same bonfire. But this is also paralyzing the state's ability to pay its bills and forcing a lot of budget cuts, and has been enormously destructive, particularly of education and social services, and a very, very strong no. It is time to end this experiment in thinking no government equals good government.
Yeah, I agree.
Initiative 1240 is the third and latest attempt by enormous corporate for-profit privatization advocates in our school systems to get a charter school provision into state law, and it's just as bad as the previous ones are, and you can see where the push is coming from by seeing who the donors are to this. You know, Bill and Melinda Gates, who have a lot of money in charter schools, a lot of Paul Allen's interests, some of the other national corporate interests in the charter schools movement. Making money off of it. That's the whole point.
The charter schools movement, you know, they always say, well, you know, students do better in charter schools, and that's not true. Students do about the same in charter schools as they do in public schools. Some charter schools do very well. Some public schools do very well. Some charter schools do very poorly, and it's the same with some public schools. So really it is a movement just to privatize the school system. And it's ironic that this initiative is on the ballot right after Initiative 1185, because I really see a continuation there, a continuum there. You defund public services, and of course your public schools are going to suffer. So you know, immediately you will get these initiatives to try to privatize government services. And it's not to make things better for the customers, that is students. It's just so that a third party can step in, a private party can step in and make a profit.
Yeah. And also a reminder, the state Supreme Court has already found that the state legislature is not meeting its constitutional obligation to adequately fund K through 12 education. We should not be going in the direction of diverting money away from public schools. The legislature is under court order to put more money into public schools, and that is simply not happening with this.
All right.
And finally, we have Referendum 74, which is probably the best shot of the four states where it's on the ballot this year. For the first time in a statewide vote for a state to legalize gay marriage, and I can't urge people to vote enough times for this. It's long, long overdue. And again, as with several of these other initiatives, most of the polling right now is just about 50-50. So by all means, get out there and vote. Tell your friends to vote. It's going to make a huge difference in a lot of people's lives. Mm-hmm. And then we have some housekeeping amendments. You want to go through those?
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about them. There's the amendment to the state constitution, Senate Joint Resolution 8221. It's essentially a move by conservative Democrats and by Republicans to limit the amount of money the state can borrow. In other words, to limit the bond issues that the state can do. And really, it makes no sense to me, and I don't understand why you would want to do that in a time when the state needs money to fix roads, to fund public schools. It's just another way of saying, hey, you know, let's give up. Let's stop giving money to government, because, gosh, you know, and let's continue to complain about the sorry state of our infrastructure.
And it's a particular type of government spending, because government spending that is, for instance, tax subsidies for large corporations is not affected by the ability to issue bonds. It's the infrastructure products that benefit everybody, not just the very wealthy.
Yeah, the very things that could be creating jobs here, you know. So, and then we move on to the Senate Joint Resolution 8223. That's proposing an amendment to the Constitution so that the University of Washington and Washington State University can take their endowment funds and their other funding and invested in riskier investments like stocks and bonds and hedge funds and that sort of thing. And you know, this is the very thing that hedge fund managers and these high paid executives on Wall Street, it's the very thing that has allowed them to take home huge bonuses. They talk about their biggest customers being public endowments and private foundations
pensions.
And pension funds. And when they talk about public endowments, they're talking about universities like the University of Washington and WSU, just giving them money for some of the most expensive and some of the riskiest investment activities out there. And these things make enormous amounts of money for executives and traders on Wall Street, and they don't make much money at all for the clients, that is, these public endowments. So I think that should be rejected out of hand. And then the remaining three ballot measures are things that are on the ballot precisely because Tim Iman initiatives have limited the legislature's ability to pass tax increases or to close tax loopholes in the state tax system. And of course, they should be maintained because these are things that the legislature should have been able to pass on its own, but because they couldn't get the two-thirds of majority, it has to go to voters. The first one is to close the tax loophole that has given a tax break to big financial institutions. That one should be maintained. That's engrossed Senate Bill 6635. The second one is substitute House Bill 2590 that would close the tax loophole that's given a big tax break to petroleum companies. That one should also be maintained. And then finally, we have the King County Prop 1, which would put a little money towards an automated fingerprint ID system. Now that's a no-brainer. That's something that King County should have been able to do without having to take it to a vote of the people. And that one should also be approved.
All right. So those are yeses on those.
Those are yeses
three.
On yes. those last three.
No on the first two.
Yes no on the first two. Yeses
okay.
on the last three.
All right. Anything else on those? On
the no. We're going to go to the statewide offices and the legislative state
next
legislative
week.
Offices and judicial and sheriff next week. And all of those picks are at www.eatthestate.org.
If you like to mark your ballot and mail it in early, you can go to the website.
Yep.
Which we are encouraging people to do, get ballots in early.
Or you can pick up a print copy.
Absolutely, a free paper. Just go old school.
Well, speaking of papers, Seattle Times apparently is doing something interesting this last week.
Oh, yeah. The Seattle Times has announced that it will run a free ad campaign for Rob McKenna and for I-74, which is the Gay Marriage Initiative. So they're offering full-page ads to run for free from now until the election.
$80,000 worth of independent expenditures.
Yes, in support of the Republican candidate for governor. Now, they said the decision was made by the business or corporate side of the newspaper, not by the news side of the newspaper, in other words, the Blethyn family. And they're describing it as an experiment to test the effectiveness of newspaper advertising on political campaigns, hoping, of course, that it will lead to more ad sales to candidates and initiative campaigns. But that's kind of like, you know, a major network, TV network saying, gosh, we're gonna give free advertising from now until the election to Mitt Romney to see if we can have an impact on the presidential election, and then maybe that will line our shareholders' pockets a little bit more.
And to be clear, they're doing this both for Rob McKenna and for Referendum 74 in support of gay marriage. And as much as I support R74 and as much as I find McKenna odious, a journalism company has no business doing either of these things. It's absolutely unconscionable.
Yeah, and you know, in response, about 100 Seattle Times news staffers drafted and sent a protest letter to publisher Frank Blethyn, saying, you know, this really is going to impact our ability to do our job. We're really supposed to maintain some kind of journalistic objectivity, and it's hard to do it when the editorial page has spilled over into the news section with full page ads in support of a Republican candidate in a gubernatorial race.
Although to be fair, the Blethyn's biases, you know, against the estate tax and taxes and unions in general have been spilling over pretty consistently into the reporting ever since the PI went away from print.
Yeah.
But this is something that literally no other newspaper in the country has done.
Yeah, and it's getting a lot of national attention, too.
All right. Moving on, Mayor Mike McGinn and SPD.
Yeah, the Mayor Mike McGinn was caught this week again kissing the SPD's ass, and four city council members plus the grab my notes here. I'm trying to find my notes. Plus the city attorney Pete Holmes had drafted a statement saying that they were very unhappy with McGinn's rejecting their top choice for the new monitor of the SPD under the court-monitored agreement with the Department of Justice. They support Merrick Bob, who is a nationally known police accountability expert, but McGinn vetoed him out of hand, saying he had a conflict of interest because one of the people who sits on the board of Bob's consulting company helped the Department of Justice write certain portions of its report on the Seattle Police Department. But of course, McGinn then
which again underscores that they're seeing the DOJ not as exercising an oversight function, but as being an adversary.
Yeah, exactly. And then McGinn went on to say that he would accept any of the other three consultants that were in the running, including a guy who's highly controversial, Michael Ganacco, who has served as the overseer for the LA County Sheriff's Department and has been accused by a lot of people down in Los Angeles of being way too cozy with the Sheriff's Department and not exercising an adequate oversight function.
And the LA Sheriff's Department has exactly the same kind of problematic relationship with non-white communities that SPD does.
So once again, the city council and the city attorney's office are absolutely right. McGinn is in the pocket of the SPD and they needed to call him on it.
And McGinn's apologetics for the racist behavior of the Seattle Police Department should disqualify him from re-election, period, no matter what else he has or has not done over the past few years. It's that bad.
Well, we'll have to see who runs against him, won't we?
All right. Sticking with elections and donations, update this
week? Yeah, a little bit of an update on some local elections and the donations that have rolled in for them. The Pro-Charter Schools Initiative 1240 got another $700,000 this week, $400,000 from Steve Ballmer's wife. Ballmer is the Microsoft CEO. Another $200,000 from billionaire businessman Eli Broad and $100,000 from Doris Fisher, who's co-founder of the Gap clothing chain. She's not even a Washington resident. She lives down in San Francisco. So Pro Charter Schools initiative gaining a lot of outside money and a lot of money from folks who would like to see the schools become their own kind of playpen. Rob McKenna's campaign, in addition to getting about $80,000 in free ads from the Seattle Times, also got $4.25 million from the Republican Governors Association just this week. And the Republican Governors Association is heavily funded by the Koch brothers. They've now put a total of $11.38 million into McKenna's race. The pro-Inslee crowd has raised about $8 million, and each of the campaigns on their own have raised a total of about $10 million each. So all told, to date, the governor's race has seen about $40 million poured into it to try to elect McKenna over Inslee in a state that usually tips Democrat.
All right. Campaign finance reform.
Yeah, the Seattle City Council voting 7-2 this week to change campaign finance law in the city of Seattle so that candidates cannot roll over campaign funds from one election to the next and can't start fundraising until January 1st of the year before an election, that is, for the two-year cycle of that particular election. Now, of course, they exempted themselves, that is, the sitting city council members, from this requirement by enabling existing council members to have 30 days to roll over their existing campaign funds into the next election. And two city council members, Sally Clark and Tom Rasmussen, who were the two largest campaign cash raisers in their last re-election bids, were the ones who voted no on that. So something of an improvement, but the culture still very much needs to be challenged.
Yeah.
All right. On to National and DOMA.
Yeah, the Second Circuit Court of Appeals this week in New York ruled to strike down the Defense of Marriage Act. Now, the second appeals court decision is really, it didn't just strike down DOMA. It was the third major lawsuit to support gay marriage and the second one to strike down DOMA. The First Circuit Court in Boston ruled against DOMA in May of this year, and the Ninth Circuit overturned California's ban on same-sex marriage earlier than that. Now, the Obama administration's Department of Justice announced in February 2011 that it would no longer defend DOMA in court, although it still remains the law of the land until the Supreme Court chooses to hear one of these cases. And this Second Circuit Court of Appeals case has the best running to be the one that the Supreme Court will take up, precisely because all of the justices can sit in and rule on it, whereas the First Circuit Court case, Elena Kagan would probably have to recuse herself from that, and that could lead to a tie vote on the Supreme Court.
And the author in the second district case is a very conservative and very well-known judge, which is the second time that an extremely conservative judge has authored the Court of Appeals decision striking down DOMA. The problem with the Supreme Court, of course, is that there's a very strong chance that because the Supreme Court is so conservative, it may well uphold DOMA, even though there's been all these lower court rulings against it.
Yeah, many people are seeing Justice Anthony Kennedy as the swing vote on this case, because he tends to vote for individual rights, regardless of whether it involves an issue that's dear to the heart of liberals or conservatives.
All right. How about briefly this week in the alternate universe?
Yeah, well, we had Paul Ryan putting a stop in Youngstown, Ohio, in a St. Vincent de Paul soup kitchen and getting them in a little bit of hot water. Basically, he and his family and his Secret Service entourage and the media showed up completely unannounced at a soup kitchen in Ohio, got a volunteer to let them in the door, spent 5 minutes there having photos and videos taken while Ryan washed a clean pot in the kitchen without any gloves, I might add, and that should have been scalding hot water, and it wasn't. And that particular action is enormously destructive to a soup kitchen like that that is dependent on government funding for some of its support, and individual donors for a lot of its support, has to stay nonpartisan, has to stay out of politics, and instead, we're going to lose some donors because it hosted Ryan, and then lose some other donors when it went public complaining about Ryan showing up. Somebody in that kitchen, number one, should have had a food handler's permit. Number two, should have had volunteer training. There shouldn't have been photos taken in there without other people in the picture giving their express. I mean, there are all sorts of reasons why this is a incredibly reprehensible action. But it's the GOP in a nutshell. They claim to care about and want to help the poor and show up for a couple minutes and walk away and leave things a lot worse than they were there before. Oh, and also on an election on the alternate universe, Maricopa County in Arizona, home of Sheriff Joe Arpaio, also is in a little bit of hot water this week. It turns out on the Spanish version of their voter registration cards, they listed November 8th as their reminder to go out and vote. The problem, of course, is that the election is on November 6th, and some people are thinking that that might not have been an accidental mistake.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, there was a 50-50 chance if you're going to get the wrong date on there that you would put a date that's before the election versus one that's after the election, so that people would have, if they show up to vote, would be told, no, the election's tomorrow, not today. Well, they didn't get that 50%. They didn't get that 50% chance.
What are the odds?
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of eight, events.
A lot of events coming up this week. A lot going on, starting today, and it's already starting going on until 6 p.m. down in Olympia, the People's Movement Assembly. That's sort of the annual conference of peace and social justice advocates going on at the Evergreen State College, Lecture Hall 1 and Seminar 2 building. Tomorrow from 7 to 9 p.m. in the evening, Dr. Jill Stein, the Green Party presidential candidate, will be in town speaking along with 43rd District Representative candidate Kashama Sawant, who's running against Frank Chop and who is also very, very good. Tickets for that are $10 at the door, $7.50 in advance at Town Hall, 8th and Seneca. Monday night, 6 o'clock, the final presidential debate from Boca Raton, home of the 53%. Tuesday, October 23rd, 7 p.m., the Organized Workers for Labor Solidarity are hosting a monthly forum, Who's Driving the Bus and Where's It's Heading?, with transportation workers and riders talking about local and national public transit policy. That'll be at the Seattle Labor...
There's a lot to talk talk about
Seattle Labor Temple Hall 6th at Broad and First in Belltown. October 23rd and 24th, once again, there will be a quarterly camp out at Westlake Park downtown on the evening of the 23rd and then the morning of the Wednesday the 24th, a 7:30 a.m. rally and an 8:15 a.m. march to City Hall for the Committee to End Homelessness in King County's quarterly meeting. Thursday, October 25th at 7:30, Thomas Frank is going to be at Town Hall. $5 for that. Also $5 at Town Hall on Friday, October 26th, for Amy Goodman is going to be in town along with Thomas Moynihan. Both them and Frank in town plugging their latest books. So a lot going on this week.
And as you heard at the speaker at 7:30, Daisy Rojas will be speaking today 3 to 5 p.m. at University Baptist Church here in Seattle. Talking as we do every week with Job Parrish and Maria Tomchick, both with Eat the State. And where can people find Eat the State?
Many places, I wouldn't say everywhere because we're a little rusty at this sort of thing, but many of the places where you find free periodicals around town, for our rare collector's edition print issue. And, if you can't find that print edition, you can always find us online day or night at www.eatthestate.org and with all the different, election endorsements and much more too.